When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we have with us a very special guest today. Everybody say hello. You know him, you love him, probably if you heard our other podcast. Pete Peppers is in the house. Hey, Pete.
Hey, hi, Bob.
I should have called you Bob Peppers. let's talk about the season 4 preview. And maybe catch up a little bit with where we left off in season 3, yeah? Let's do that first. Because I needed the refresher. It's been over a year. About a year and 3 months or so. And I was ready to get back into this.
Yeah, they pushed it back a little bit this time. It followed pretty closely in the previous seasons because it was one of their bigger shows. And now they sort of pushed it back a little bit this time.
Yeah.
I feel like we're lucky to get it because, man, they just missed the writers and the actor strike. So it's like one of those things was just in the right pocket of development that the post-production people are going to take it and turn it around. So
yeah,
I was kind of when they came out and announced it a month or a couple months ago, I was like, wow, that's a nice little winter treat.
You bring up a good point that the next one will not follow as closely, obviously, because they would have had it written already by the time we got the next one, you know, the last one airing. So this time they didn't do the writer's room while, you know, they were waiting for it to come out.
Did they green light the fifth season too when they renewed for season 4? I felt like I remembered them doing that because that's the other concern too. It's like unless they did that, and even if they did, there's also the very real concern that they might, you know, depending on how this season goes, like yeah, I guess that's always a concern that they could always call it off at any time. It's like what Goyer was saying, that, you know, you never can count on anything. But I thought maybe before we even get to like where we were in season 3, maybe we could kind of for looky-loos coming in and seeing, you know, about this For All Mankind, maybe we could go around and talk about the things we like about the show. Like what recommends this show to people? And since you're the guest, Pete, maybe we can start with you.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this because it's one of those shows, it seems like it has a pretty good following, but yet, like, not that many people I know watch it, which is weird because it's in space, you know what I mean? And a lot of people I know watch sci-fi, and it doesn't necessarily fit into that same, you know, that same category in a way. And I guess what I like about it is, I mean, I definitely like the alternative history, the alternate timeline. It's just fun to think about how just, you know, small changes could lead to bigger things down the road. That's always kind of fun. And I mean, overall, it's, for me, it's just sort of like a comfort, you know, it's like comfort food. It's like a comfort show, you know, a comfort food show of just like, it's just a solid character drama that, you know, it doesn't really have like a lot as far as, you know, like big surprises or crazy, you know, it's pretty straightforward, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But it all just sort of works in that way. And it just happens to be in that, you know, the background is just something that would be, you know, always like the space, you know, the space program and what could have been and all of that, you know what I mean? Like that's just something that's always going to kind of work for me personally. And, you know, it's one of those weird things too. Like, you know, that's one of the things that happened, you know, like going to the moon was a crazy thing that actually, you know, we actually got behind as a nation and pulled off. And compared to a lot of the other stuff that you might put in that same category, it's still kind of the most, you know, uplifting in a way, at least, for me, because it's, you know, that's just fascinating, like how big the universe is and how, you know, how little of it we've actually seen.
It is a big moment for the world. It wasn't just a United States achievement. You know, I know Neil Armstrong said it, you know, it's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But like, it felt like at the time, all around the globe, maybe with the exception of the Soviets, that it was like awe-inspiring. People were really, you know, you look up and be like, gosh, there's people walking on that thing. That's the thing. It's like, I just missed that era, but like, I can't even imagine being like a little kid and looking up there and being like, yeah, there's people walking on. You could watch it live on the television right now. And, like you mentioned, those butterfly flaps, you know, butterfly wing flaps of like, cause the whole premise of the show is that the Russians beat, you know, Apollo 11 to the moon by like a month or so. And because the Russians won, America just never stopped the space race, and we continued to jostle and kind of, you know, race for the moon, race to have the first permanent colony, race to get to Mars first. And the other thing I really like it is like, I'm a sucker for like Apollo 11 or 13. Like, I love those like space disasters, seeing people overcome. And like, you get two or three solid Apollo 13s every freaking season, you know. Space is a harsh mistress. They throw characters that you really care about into that environment, and then you hope they don't die. And there's some genuine human drama, you know, when you have characters you care about and you throw them in those extreme situations, and heroism and, you know, coming together. And I feel like there's a lot of just like good positive feelings.
And people watching. Do die too, which is you know, nobody's safe, so that's another thing that you kind of, it's kind of built into the story, that but the way they jump forward too, so
yeah. And since we're
stakes
primarily following astronauts, like, you know, and you've got the show where it started off in the late 60s and we roughly jump 10 years into the future, like either through the harsh environment of space or just through natural age, we are losing a lot of the characters. And I guess that's one of the things I'm kind of curious about, to see as we continue to go on, like, are they going to continue to be able to develop new characters and get them in the pipeline to care about? And I think that the answer is yes on that. I was wondering, Jim, do you have anything to add as far as like with the appeal of the show?
Well, Pete, you mentioned like how straightforward the show is. And I think that's one of its biggest appeals to me, is all the action that happens is driven by the motivations of the characters. It's not plot for plot's sake, right? And these are my favorite types of shows, like when tension is drawn, and they manage to wring so much tension and so much drama out of situations I won't call mundane, but straightforward, I think, is, yeah, a good term for it. Like, here's the problem, here's what we need to do, and yet that A to B there is just so tense and dramatic every time you watch it, and a lot of the times really you know, gut-wrenching and heart-wrenching and brain-wrenching. It's wrenching everything I got. I love that method of storytelling that Ron Moore tends to go for. He doesn't try and trick you or switch things up and make things, you know, crazy and unpredictable. He just tells you a really damn good story.
The one thing that might not recommend the show, and there's one, in my opinion, flaw of this show, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it rhymes with Danny and Karen. That's the one thing that consistently I've been like, oh, Jesus Christ. And it's one thing I'm wondering if it'll raise its scaly head this season. I know it literally can't raise both of its scaly heads, but
I think all those characters are dead. I think Danny's gonna kill Jimmy for what happened with Karen, and then Ed's gonna kill Danny for what happened with Karen, and
the bad Danny, not the good Danny, because we got
two Dannys, which is really
the
confusing.
Best of us and the worst of us, all contained in the two separate people.
Yeah.
But what? Yeah, that's it. You'll figure it out when you get to what, late season two, if
yeah. It's an unfortunate turn that it takes, but I think overall, with that in the rearview mirror at this point, it wasn't a fatal flaw, you know.
No. It did pay off fairly well by everything, you know, by the end of season three. The way it's like, you know, it did generate a lot of useful drama situations. Now, before we go further, I want to state up front that Pete, you've seen two episodes so far, right, of the new season?
Yes, I watched two.
And I've seen the first episode because my son literally held me up at gunpoint and says, I know you've got those damn screeners. We're going to watch at least one. And then, Jim, you have not seen any, not but the trailers.
No, I've stayed unspoiled.
So I will say that the only thing I will say about the first episode is that I was very pleased. It felt immediately like, hell yeah. You know, one of the highlights of every season is the flash forward, where you get to see those butterfly flaps. And we finally got into an era where, like, I was an adult. I was participating in pop culture. When they yada yada through, like, 92 to 2003, I'm like, yes, this is good. This is fun.
Yeah. I didn't think about it.
I don't want to spoil it, Jim.
Yeah, I didn't think about it until you brought that up, Aaron, but it does make a difference. That the way that you experience, I think, these years are going to feel quite different than, you know, the 60s. Because we already, when we think about the 60s and the 70s and in that period of time, we already experienced those as the past, you know what I mean? So this is a different experience now that we're moving closer to present day.
Yeah, and we'll see what so we can use Jim as our control subject, and
all right.
We have had various exposures, me and Pete, to the For All Mankind season 4 product, and we'll just use Jim as our control here. I thought maybe we could take a tour to refresh people's memories, like Jim said, about where we left off with things, our intrepid crew, and if I've left anybody off, feel free to nominate anybody. But I thought we could start with Margot and Sergey. And by the way, for here on out, it's spoilers. So if you not spoilers for the new season, but spoilers if you haven't seen For All Mankind seasons 1 through 3. So if you need to catch up, or it sounds like this is a rad show and you want to pause us here, go catch up on 3 seasons and come on back. Margo and Sergey, we last left them. Margo had engineered a daring CIA rescue of Sergey from Soviet bondage, and got the noose tightened around her neck because the Russians got her in doing some backdoor NASA information knowledge sharing shenanigans with the Russians, and she's presumed dead in the United States, but actually was spirited off into the Soviet Union. Any open questions in that for you, Jim?
There's not. So we're going to say that spoilers don't include stuff that's been released in trailers, right? Because I have seen the trailers for season 4.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I was surprised to see her back, because I thought the point that we left her at, we could have just left her story entirely there.
See, I remember we talked in the late season 3 about, we had never really gotten an inside look at the Soviet Union. And it was always something that's like, you know, it's like we were growing more and more comradely with the Soviets, you know, like that we had, it would feel weird to go back to just a standard geopolitical standoff after the events of season 3. And I feel like Margo is going to be that prying open the door so that we can get more of the Soviet perspective. Cause that's been, you know, it's just like in real life, we see what they do, but we don't really know what they think and how they feel. And this is a kind of a doorway or I guess a keyhole into that. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first 2 episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Here
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to More for All Mankind.
I wanted to ask you guys, this is something that I think I'm a little bit out of step with the fandom that exists, you know, for the show. I really like Margot, the character.
I do, too.
Is that out of step? Am I out of step, too? Oh, boy.
Well, I mean, it seems like you see a lot of these things like, you know, calling her a traitor and all this kind of stuff. And, like, I get that. I mean, she did do totally those things. But, like, one of the things I love about the character is the way that that all makes sense of her doing what she thought was best. But then, you know, the power that is there, like, kind of just crushing her. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I just was wondering where you guys were at with the character at the end of season three, because you know, like I rewatched the season three finale before this, and I was thinking about that speech that she gives there, and it was just really one of the best moments in the series, if not, you know, just it was definitely in the finale, but maybe in the whole series, I would say, where she passes the, you know, off to Aleda, and then she just sort of walks off, you know what I mean? And it was just sort of like such a great character and the way that they put that all together. I'm really fascinated to see what happens to her over there, because like you said, Aaron, I think it is a good idea to see more about what goes on in Russia and like have like some actual Soviet characters instead of just like, you know, people that go against our characters that we like or whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, but I don't feel like maybe she's got something coming in future, like in the end of the season or the next season, if she's still around or whatever, but I feel like this is going to be a rough one for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like some kind of, and I get it, the whole thing about being a traitor and all that, although I got to say, in a joint Soviet-American operation, I would hope that the heads of the space administration would work closely enough that they could kind of help each other out, maybe on the, you know, maybe not supposed to, but like, you know, lives are at stake. And but the thing about Margot is that she was extremely arrogant, because there's the thing that I said a lot of times last season is like, you know, that old Woody Woodpecker cartoon, the, you know, there was this one particular couple episodes where this FBI or this police kind of McGruff type of character would come in at various stages of the episode and be like, if only Woody had gone to the police, none of this would have ever happened. And I kept on. That was Margot through most of season two, season three. It's like the second those Russians started sweating her, it's like, just go to the FBI and tell them what you did. And this is like, but her arrogance and thinking that she could navigate this and solve this problem herself and like have her cake and eat it too. I can see why that rubs people the wrong way, even if you don't buy into the espionage angle of it.
Was it arrogance? I'm not sure I'd label it like that. I mean, it was a little bit of like naivete on her part, having, you know, thinking that, oh, she can handle this. It was also the love for Sergei, right? Like, I feel like at the time where she realizes she's in real serious trouble is also the time when Sergei's life is hanging in the balance. And if she does go to the police, Sergei's done. And I think that's like a big factor in it, too.
But there again,
I think it kind of tracks, because, I mean, really, like, the show has been telling us that for her entire life, at least her entire adult life, like the only thing that's mattered to her is the space program. You know what I mean? Like she lives in her office.
And blues.
Not just like figuratively, but literally.
Literally.
So like, I think that it all tracks for her doing things that she thinks makes sense in that context. And just, yeah, I don't know if naivete is the word, but I mean, she was just sort of, she was just doing what she thought was the best for, you know, for the program and for humanity in a larger sense, and didn't really get like what was there, I guess. You know what I mean?
I do want to, at the risk of fighting in front of our guest here, I gotta say, there's no way you're saying Margot's character is not arrogant. Like the way she treated the astronauts and Molly and some of the other infrared, sure. Like, okay, because like I said, that's one of, I think, her defining characteristics is she is a very arrogant, cocksure person. And I think that's part of the kind of like her Greek tragic flaws that all kind of came together to make that situation. And you're right. It's all about Sergei. It's also about her just wanting to advance human knowledge and advance the space. But like arrogance was a big, and I think a lot like, man, when she squared off against Molly and Ed, like those are
well
those
she's
are
also
the
fighting
shining stars
extremely
of the show.
Stubborn yeah, and like arrogant they, person they, with Molly too, like
true whew, but Molly's cooler battle. So
yeah, that's the thing, that's really what it comes down to, right? Like Ed, you expect that from Ed and Molly because they're cool people, like that's the way that they operate, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah, they're test pilots.
So I kind of think that's a good strategy when dealing with them, is to be like, you know what, you're going to do this way, you're going to try to walk all over me. Well, I got power here. I can exert it somewhat. You know what I mean?
Let's talk about Margot's essentially kind of handpicked successor. Or at least that's how she's been poised in the show. Aleda. We talked about her. That was the one in season one. I'm like, where the hell are they going with this Aleda and her dad and all this stuff? And really has paid off. I know she's kind of poised to be a big thing in NASA, but it seems like one of the storylines they're going to play with is the fact that, she's struggled with mental illness or mental wellness. It's something that she seemed like she overcome, but she went through an extremely traumatic event last season. And, you know, she also presumably is going to experience in the off season the loss of her father, you know. And then she's still got her won't be a young son anymore. She's got her husband. I'm very curious to see, like, is she going to be able to take the throne, or as some of her personal demons and the stresses of the things that she's gone through, is that going to catch up to her and kind of keep her from excelling?
Yeah, because these were both points that when I watched the trailer, I was sort of like, whoa, that's a little bit surprising to me.
Yes. Like, not having seen any of the episodes, just from the trailer, it does not seem like she is even at NASA. She is at Helios, as best I can tell, and Daniel Stern has taken over NASA.
Yeah, that
Daniel
was a big
Stern.
The
wet home, bandits.
Home Alone Zone. Daniel
well,
Stern.
If Joe Pesci shows up, I check your faucets at the Molly Cox Space Center.
No,
yeah.
So
that was
where
wild, right? Because, I guess the trauma that she's experienced in these past 8 or so years has really taken its toll, and NASA was not helping.
Yeah, and also know that she was getting recruited hard, and the only thing that was on the side of staying with NASA is like, God damn it, I love NASA, and they did Margot particularly
to
did
Margo.
So much for me.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I was gonna say when I rewatched the finale. That's what jumped out to me, was that she turned down a really good deal. Karen came to her, and that was what she said. She's like, Margot made that happen. You know, like me getting to the moon, like all of that. She was talking about how she kept getting fired. And I totally agree. This is one of the things that in season one, you're just sort of like, yeah, okay, I get it. Like, this is an interesting thing, but how does it fit in? I mean, obviously her father was interesting in season one, but the whole, like, why are we spending so much time on his child was a little bit strange. But man, it pays off big time now because it's another character that you're just like, you'd be surprised like how much investment you have by the time, you know, she starts to really do things here. And, you know, at the end of last season, she's under the impression that Margot died, as far as I know, right?
I think it's a very closely guarded secret. Or at least that's my assumption, that Margot lived. You know?
Yeah. So that I'm really excited to see where they go with that. And yeah, like, how do they explain that? Like, she should be ahead of NASA. Like, she was there. She essentially, you know, guided them through that really dark moment and everything else. I mean, under most circumstances, you imagine that she would automatically become the successor there. And, you know, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, I'm super invested in her story. She might be my favorite character at this point. Like, all that stuff that happened with Bob, I think it was in season two. Bill, right.
Yeah, yeah, they're great. They're like the dynamic duo as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, they went with that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool. I want to move to the Baldwin family next. Ed, Karen, Kelly. Karen, the aforementioned two-headed dragon of the Danny Karen insanity, is dead. She died in the explosion at the Johnson Space Center, now the Molly Cobb Space Center. Ed heroically saved his daughter from preeclampsia by launching her at the top of a rocket into low Martian orbit. And she had a healthy baby. And Ed is... you know what? I guess the question is, where is he go? I mean, we see in the trailer that he is advanced age, and last year he was only able to keep up with the astronauts with lots of HGH and test and testosterone and steroids. How's old man Baldwin still out there doing it?
Seems like he's moving into more of a PR role. Based on the teaser trailer that they released, where he's doing essentially like a fluff piece for Helios. Yeah.
Yeah.
In some really bad, in my opinion, old man makeup.
Well, you know, that's always been a checkered subject on the show. Like, aging makeup every once in a while, it's good. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes it's hilariously bad. But,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Ed is like always like, that's my son's favorite character. You know, he's always like watching between his fingers when Ed's out on the line or his ass is on the line. So, I wonder, do you have any idea where they're going with Kelly? Like, where, you know, is they're positioning her? You think she will continue to be an astronaut? Will she retire to raise the latest line of the astronaut royalty?
Man, how do you keep?
I can't really comment on this because I saw the first two,
right.
But
that's we're just priming Jim for this.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, how do you keep them on the farm once they've seen Mars? Like,
dude,
what's she gonna go back to?
One thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that's yeah.
But, I assume she still has ambitions, and I don't know that she can fulfill them outside of something grand like working for Helios or NASA or something.
You mentioned Ed that, or not Ed, you mentioned Pete that right before we got on to do this podcast that they dropped a whole bunch of little mini-sodes about the history of For All Mankind. And when you catch up to the current day of season four, they mentioned that they're able to go from Earth to Mars and the right, you know, the right celestial circumstances. And was it a month? 30 days?
Yeah, 31 days.
You think with that and what we've seen of how large and established a Martian base, could you? I wonder at what stage will you actually be able to like bring family? You know, like it's going to be safe enough that like you could actually start raising a family there.
I think. Well, I mean, there's no terraforming or anything that you can.
Yeah, for sure.
In the trailer, so you would imagine that they would have to do something. I mean, they're either going to have to dig underground cities like, you know, most Mars colonization stories
got those lava tubes.
So, you know what I mean, like I think that would still be a ways off, because I think one of the things you're going to see in this, based on like the recruitment posters and the video and stuff that they put out, the website, like the Helios like going to Mars kind of thing, I think one of the things we're going to see here is we're going to see that it's a business first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they brought the private industry in season three for a reason, I think. And so if you're thinking about that, you're thinking about running a corporation and keeping the shareholders happy and all that kind of stuff. Where does that fit in? If you can bring someone back in 31 days, you know, you just sign them up on contracts like you would if they were going to Alaska to fish or something like that. You know what I mean? So
the most dangerous catch, Martian yeah. crab.
So like, I think there's going to be some, you know, because I was thinking at the end of the last season, whenever they're, you know, that was the thing when Molly came back, right? She says mm-hmm. he wants someone who really had his ass on the line. We're getting mm-hmm. into a thing where people who aren't astronauts and don't really have space as a, you know, exploration for the sake of exploration, like as any of their kind of motivation anymore. Now it's going to be like, well, how do we go out there and mine these really valuable asteroids and bring that wealth back here? You know what I mean? So, I think it might be a long way off until we see like it being more than a business venture and an actual like a long-term colonization.
I do think they got to do something with Kelly because she's one of the next generation that they've carefully built up. And, you know, as we lose main characters, you need people like her. So it's like, I don't think they're just going to sit her and make her a house mom, you know, but
yeah, can
you imagine her? Like, she needs to team up with a different character or something. You know what I mean? Like her husband, you know, the father of her son died.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and her kid by itself is a kid. So that's not really, you know, if
he'll be interested in season six.
Yeah, because Ed goes so far, you know what I mean? But like, it's a father daughter. So they need to like, they need to put her with someone that can, you know, be her scene partner or whatever.
I want to talk about Bad Danny and his brother, Jimmy. Bad Danny was last left marooned at the North Korean space capsule. The first people on Mars after his just real tour of force of being a shitter last season. His drug problems and mental issues combined to let him to his negligence led to the death of several astronauts and almost the destruction of the Happy Valley colony. So they marooned his ass, and then his brother was busy helping economic terrorists, I guess, people that were mad that their energy jobs had been replaced by helium-3 mining on the moon, and the fusion technology taking over the world, and they blew up the Johnson Space Center. And you mentioned in these little newsreel minisodes that he was sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Yes, he was like a cooperating witness and got a plea deal for 12 years.
So the way they usually go through these seasons usually go 18 months to 2 years in a single season. I could see him getting out in the middle of the season, especially with time. You know, although federal prison, I don't know if you get like time off for good behavior. I think those sentences are pretty sticky. But 12 years would have him come out like what, in 2004-ish? Which is just a year down the line from where our timeline left off last season.
I think his trial was in 98, so 12 years would be 2010. Oh, so it'd be in between.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So, and honestly, I'm fine with Bad Danny and Jimmy just going away. Like if Bad Danny had vacuumed. Explosively decompressed his capsule, I'd be fine with that, you know.
Yeah, as an idea, like I don't hate the idea of you know, what they tried to do with that, with the bombing and everything and the whole thing, but I think that it was one area where they didn't really get to spend enough time because they jump around so much, and that didn't really work that great for me in season three. And Jimmy, I mean, he's got a hard, it's, you know, he didn't, there wasn't much to really invest in that story, the way that he was there. I mean, you feel bad for him, but.
Yeah, because the parents and all that.
That's all you feel.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of complexity there. So, like, I wouldn't miss, you know, him being gone. And Bad Danny, like, I feel like he's got to die up there in a way because of the fact that, like, how do you make that work that he was, you know, like, I guess they could have just shipped him back whenever the rest of them went back. But I don't know. Like, it feels like there's a tragic end at the end of that. Like, if you put someone by himself out there, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like there's more that you could do with the way that the characters feel after the fact. And like I said, I watched two episodes, but they don't mention him that I, you know, that I know, remember at all. So
interesting.
Like, this isn't coming from something like that, but it feels like he serves a better role to be like a dark spot on the whole Mars adventure rather than bringing him back and like somehow rehabilitating the character or something like that.
Yeah. He never had a villainous astronaut.
Yeah, that wouldn't work for me. Unless they're Russian, of course. It's interesting to me that everybody who knows about that affair is kind of like majorly sidelined at this point, right? And Ed never found out about it last season. He almost found out about it, but never did. And now Karen's dead. And now Jimmy's off in prison. And now Danny is who knows where. I think the only other person who knew about it was Margot's husband. Or sorry, not Margot's, Molly's husband.
Oh, yeah, Molly's.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's still around. But his only connection really to Ed was Karen. And she's gone. So I don't. Is this even going to come back up? Is this going to be something that's going to stick with Ed because he thought of Danny as a son and he tried to help him out and he failed? Is this going to have any emotional ramification for Ed, do you think?
Yeah, I wonder if Ed,
fuck Danny, I'm over him. I tried to give him a shot and he failed.
I wonder if there's a little bit of Ed, you know, still out there doing it because he's got nothing. He's trying to find a purpose, like a reason. I don't know. I then you know what? Fuck bad Danny. We got a lot to talk about. Okay. Let's talk about good Danny. Saint Daniel Pool.
I just want to know if he's ever going to find out about that affair. I guess not.
Saint Daniel Pool, a steely-eyed missile woman as you've ever seen. Not afraid to wrestle a Russian down a ramp to claim first boot on Mars. leader of men and women. She was the commander of the Mars base last we saw. A lot of her in the trailer is wearing civilian clothes. That's where we left her. I'm curious to see how we develop Danielle going forward. I know you and me, Pete, know a little bit about you know, Danielle and the new season. Jim, you got a slot to put Danielle?
I mean, she seems to just be poised to continue more of what she's doing, which is leading high profile missions, commanding everybody superbly well. Making all the right choices. Yeah, I don't know. I love Danielle. I think she's awesome. And I want to see her do more of what she's been doing because she's been kind of a guiding force for NASA.
I love that she's like, her and Ed are like two sides of the same coin. Like, Ed is the brash cowboy, risk taker, you know, got the right stuff, capital R, capital S. Danielle, not that she has the wrong stuff, but she's also a lot more organizational, leadership, process driven, more careful, a little bit more stay within the envelope. And those are all things that you want in a maturing space program. But I always thought she's an interesting counterpoint and one of my all time favorite characters on the show. How about Dev Ayesa / Helios? I was kind of shocked when they had the trailer and Ed's hawking Helios because I kind of thought Helios might go belly up last season. They were kind of in financial trouble. They had a disastrous Mars mission where essentially kind of like, well, I don't know. Like, did they bail NASA out? Did NASA bail them? I guess it's a little bit of everybody kind of bailing everybody else out. But I was kind of surprised to see Helios not only back this season, but in a, you know, a commanding role in this space adventuring. Am I the only one? Because like I said, I really thought they're telling the tale of Dev going down the toilet, especially with his business partner Karen getting blown up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do touch on this in the in those minisodes.
Yeah, I think it's one thing
you could give your perspective first, Jim, if you want.
I was kind of surprised, but I mean, they were grooming Karen to be kind of the new leader of Helios, and that's obviously off the table, right? So
yeah,
who steps into that. His business partner seemed to be almost absent last season, so he didn't seem like the guy to lead it. So maybe he was just the fallback, you know? Well, he's... And plus, you know, if he got them to Mars and that mission kind of worked out, and then, you know, you got the new Iridium stuff that's happening. I don't know. Maybe he gets pulled into it because of that, because he's, like, the visionary they need to capitalize on it. We'll see.
I felt like there's a little element of the Emperor had no clothes with him last season, because, like, a lot of stuff that he was saying about his, like, egalitarian, altruistic, yeah, you totally. Know, it turned out to be bullshit, and it does seem like this season's going to be the tension between the exploitation economically of Mars versus the exploration and, mm-hmm. you know, advancement for all mankind. And I, like I said, I liked him in the early goings, but more and more, I kind of was like, I don't want to see space shitted up with this kind of, you know, mercantilism. It's distasteful to me. And I'm curious to see how, especially with Ed, one of my favorite characters on that team, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised when I saw the trailer that Helios, I mean, I thought the same thing. At the end, I was like, I don't know what Helios, like, maybe Helios will be broken up or something, you know, because they put all their eggs in the Karen basket, and then Karen died at the end. And it's not like you can just say, oh, okay, Deb, sorry, you know, we that stuff we said about we didn't want you, and that coup that we did, like, just let's just forget about that, put you back in, and let's follow your vision. So, yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know really where that's going.
they're going to reveal that Dev financed the bombing of the Johnson Space Center. It's a Machiavellian way to retain control.
They do mention when they're talking about the coalition that was made. They talk about how Helios is still in the game and how they shifted their focus to from just helium 3 on the moon to resources on Mars, but they don't go into like great detail. And I think it is Richard Hilliard, his second in command, that they show in those clips as he stepped in and you know, righted the ship after Karen left or whatever.
And they did at the end of last season have the only functional trans Martian to Earth spaceship. Yeah. Like, NASA's had been inoperable on the surface of Mars. The Russians never even made it. And then you've got you've got their converted hotel. So, like, I guess they were in the catbird seat after that.
Yeah, and that still would be like from the images and stuff. That's still like the base in Mars orbit, right? Is what used to be the hotel Polaris or whatever. But you also briefly mentioned that they have a new engine, the plasma powered engine that makes the trip faster. So I guess that's part of how they stay in there, because it's whenever they talk about that and then make it in 31 days, they talk about how it beat the last record, which was, the Sojourner 3. So,
And right now we know that. In terms of human spaceflight, it's mentioned that it'd be about a 6 to 7 month trip to Mars and in ideal launch conditions. So, like, that is a pretty big, you know, like a month. You're talking about going from the old world to the new world, and you know that's when you can really start colonizing this time without displacing the any natives. Although that would be a wild angle, right? You think they'll actually find, because that was one thing that was kind of dangling from last season, Kelly's mission to find life on Mars.
Well, you were just talking about how Kelly needed something to do. That might be
that would be an interesting way to get her back into the saddle, that there's been some amino acids that they found in the water table, and she's the only one of the organics that the xenobiology that can make that discover. That'd be kind of cool. I want to talk about Molly. I know she's dead and she is now the space center. But any thoughts on her husband still being a character? I know he was more of a Karen kind of hang.
Yeah, that's
hangout.
The only thing. Like, he really didn't interact with anybody but Karen. So I think I think we might not. I mean, we might get like a cameo or something. But I don't expect Wayne to play a big part in the future of the show.
I will say that Wayne and Ed losing their wives in the same blast is the exact kind of thing that would bring the hippie to the naval yeah. aviator, and the naval aviator to the hippie. And I think that would be kind of a cool odd coupling if they wanted
and pot.
To explore.
I mean, he could definitely start smoking
true.
Pot with Ed.
True. You know what, the kind of hydro they have on Mars? Oh my God. You thought the moon hooch was something. Wait till you see this. And then Ellen. Ellen was an astronaut candidate, an astronaut, a moon commander, the president of the United States.
The girl who first caught the tank.
She let gay astronauts be in NASA, which is going to be, I almost mentioned this under Danielle. Like, I forget her, the young astronaut that was the first astronaut that came out as being gay and kind of like emboldened.
Will.
Not
Will,
emboldened,
I think
but.
His name was.
But you know, kind of gave Ellen the kick in the butt to come out too. I'm very curious to see if Ellen's going to be, you know, because obviously she has served all of her presidential terms. She can't run again. What do you do with Ellen? Is she just out in the pasture with Pam? Or
I think so.
All right. Any other characters I missed? Because I also want to kind of go to where we are now and like the things that from the trailer and from the advanced material that they're planning on exploring this season. Any other? Did I miss anybody? Or
no, I don't think so.
So we mentioned about how exciting it was to yada yada from the early 90s to the early aughts for us because we were all young men and listening to music and enjoying pop culture and probably paying attention to politics somewhat. We're in 2003. Yeah. Jim, prediction. Did 9/11 happen?
No. Somehow.
Interesting.
Our love of space prevented it. I couldn't tell you how, but I think he's going to pull that one off.
We're too busy fucking around in space. We didn't have enough time to fuck around in the Mideast. And
I mean, look, we got electric cars in like 1994.
True.
So
I wonder what the Mideast is. Like
right?
the oil rich country
probably
hurting.
Over there has changed.
Yeah.
See, that could also cause a 9/11, you know, suddenly.
Well, but not against us, right? Not because we don't have the oil interests over there. So
yeah, I went back and I did a video about the timeline because I was really busy when the last season came out because
go ahead and shout out your channel. Well, go ahead and shout out because like that I watched that. That's an excellent primer.
Yes.
Yeah. I if you guys aren't familiar, I you know my channel Pete Peppers. I do TV show videos, obviously, and I did one from the timeline, you know, changes from between season two and season three, and that was one of the things that really seemed unlikely to me after looking at how they put that together was that there would be a 9/11 because there really was no, all the things that would have led to that were gone, you know what I mean? Soviet Union didn't go into Afghanistan.
Right,
we had the fusion, so the fossil fuel industry was dying. You know, there was no Mujahideen. You know, I mean, everything was like that they needed to. They kind of touched on to say like the Middle East doesn't have the importance in this world that it does in ours. You know, so I don't expect that. I mean, I don't know, maybe they will go into something with that, but like, as far as what I got to at the end of that, like, I was really looking into that period of time and like how the show was choosing to make changes. Like, I think that's, they're heading away from you know, the whole wars in the Middle East thing. Because like, Gary Hart didn't go into Kuwait either. That was a big thing. You know, there was no Operation Desert Storm and Desert Shield and all that kind of stuff, so.
It looks like there was also a new gold rush. It's and the new frontier this season is going to be asteroids, which is, you know, I want to break out into Norwegian singing because this is like essentially the prequel to The Expanse. We have reached the first generation of potentially belters. I want to talk about us because like. You know, I my imagination was captured when I was a kid. I loved the, you know, popular science and mechanics and, you know, the every couple of years you'd have like these space issues and they always made a point about like how much money is out there in the belt. Like there's asteroids that might have as much platinum as the entire fucking planet. And just like all the raw materials and resources and precious materials and they're all out there just for the taking. I'm really excited to see again that these proto belters out there.
Yeah, I do think that there's a natural comparison to The Expanse because they both are following realistic, you know, ways that we'll move into the solar system. But like, I wanted to ask you guys about this because I see this all the time that, you know, people say that in their headcanon that this is a prequel to The Expanse. I mean, you guys, do you guys think of it that way? Because I think that this show has a different, you know, it's trying to tell a different, their alternate history or their alternate timeline is going a different direction than what The Expanse is. Do you guys agree with
that?
Yeah,
in The Expanse, they never got fusion figured out early enough to keep the polar ice caps from melting. All the coastal cities have huge seawalls. There's deprivation and everywhere where it seems like this is a much more optimistic kind of a Star Trek trajectory where geopolitically we're in a better spot, like technology. Although I do want to talk about, you know, the North Korea aspect of things, but yeah, it does. It's hard. It's like, maybe more of a Star Trek prequel than a Expanse prequel because, but mm-hmm. you know, also, I could see, there's still a lot of tension in the world because all this technological progress.
They're smart enough about that, yeah.
And there's people that are being displaced, and there's people that had money and now they don't have money, and it's that. Yeah, it's all you need to kind of have the friction that could cause some real problems. And I'm just curious about where they're going to go with that. Like, if we don't have a 9/11, I wonder if they'll suggest that like that's just going to something bigger is going to happen, like maybe a nuke in a city or something crazy like that. I can't imagine them just kumbayaing it this early into the season, you know, or the series.
Yeah, I think they've been, like I said, I think they've been kind of smart about that. Like, I love The Expanse, obviously. If yes. people don't know who I am, like, I'm a big fan of those books, TV shows. I made a ton of videos about it.
You and I did like a 2.5-hour retrospective of the final three novels after the sixth season dropped. Yeah. So, yeah, it might be the first thing we did together.
Yeah, maybe it might. Because you guys came in. We did one after the finale of the TV show too. You guys came on for a stream. That might have been the first time we did something together. But so like, I'm not saying that I don't want it to be an Expanse prequel. I'm just saying that I think that, like you said, it seems more optimistic. I think they're telling a story of like things could actually be better. Not perfect, maybe not utopian like Star Trek necessarily, but slightly better.
People. Yeah.
Yeah. And like The Expanse, I don't think that's the story that they tell at all. You know?
it's a lot,
I think they tell
darker.
A great character driven story inside a universe, but you know, like those characters are cool and they're good people overall, but like the actual, you know, the actual state of affairs is not very optimistic.
T-minus 3 seconds until the ad.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. the thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Touchdown, and we're back.
Yeah, they're projecting our current geopolitical trends into space, whereas I think For All Mankind suggesting maybe there's a glimmer to avoid this. And that's the next topic I want to talk about. You know, United States and Soviet Union seems like they're closer than ever. You know, they've done a lot. They've been partnering in space for 30 plus years. That's got to start paying off on the ground. There's less tensions because there's not oil and territory and proxy wars to fight. But they did introduce the North Koreans and a surprise, total surprise move, having like a pretty sophisticated space program. Did they, in any of these little mini-sodes, did they address how North Korea manages? Because like they're also in this trailer and in the they're kind of teased in the season as kind of maybe the new antagonist. Is there anything to explain like how North Korea came out of nowhere to... did they discover some kind of reserve of helium-3 and in the Korean Peninsula, or did they just the Soviet Union pulling away from that sphere of influence make them just like have to kick everything off themselves? Or because that was the one kind of like, wow, that was a wild swing last season.
The way they explained it in between seasons last year to kind of make it possible for them to be there was that I guess they're. They're more reliant on the Soviet Union because it didn't fall. Whereas right. like in our situation, we think of them as being part of under China's umbrella, I guess. Yeah. Right. And
almost like a rogue state just all around.
Yeah. But in this timeline, because the Soviet Union didn't fall, there would be relatively better off, I guess. But, you know, the story they told was that they had a program. It was for ballistic missiles. They changed that, and they went it all into rockets, and they basically gambled and got there against all odds. And what was interesting about these little vignettes about the years that we missed, they actually, because of what happened there, they actually joined the Mars 7 Alliance, which is like who's running Happy Valley, I guess. You know what I mean? So you have the U.S., the USSR. There's a coalition of European states, a coalition of Soviet states, you know, lesser states in that. And then you have North Korea, India, and Japan. And then they made the point of saying that China had sat out of that. Just China and Canada were the two major countries that didn't opt in to make it the Mars 9 or whatever. You know what I mean?
So, interesting. Yeah, I noticed that.
So
in the first
I don't
episode,
know because
talking...
I could have seen where you were going with that, like being true. But now that they're on the same side, it's a little bit confusing.
Hmm.
You know.
Where do you see the, because is this on Apple TV Plus, the app? If you go
to
like special features under For All Mankind.
Yeah, if you just go to the main page of For All Mankind to watch like the previous seasons, it's on the front page right now.
Looks like it's called Leap into a New Millennium, 1996 to 2001. And like it seems like this is gonna be an expanded version of like the yada yada of history that we get in the first episode of these seasons.
Yeah, they did that the last two seasons too. You can go back and watch the old ones too if you want.
Predictions, speculations. I know we're a little bit limited on what we can say, Pete, but let's go with our control subject first. Jim, do you have any predictions or speculations you want to share?
My prediction is we will get two more Dannys this season.
Each more evil than the last.
Two, that's what we need. Four Dannys on this show, so we really just can't tell the difference.
We need the four quadrants. You got the good, the good bad. Mm-hmm. So what would you have? Chaotic good.
Yep.
Chaotic you got, evil. Chaotic
lawful
evil.
Good,
you got lawful good. Danny be lawful good, right? And then
wait, you can't just say
Danielle. Danielle is lawful good. Bad Danny is chaotic evil. So we need the chaotic good and the lawful evil Dannys. That's to finish the square.
Yeah.
No true neutrals. No true neutrals on this show. Pete, you have a prediction. A hot prediction. I love how Jim just completely ducked out with the joke. But do you have any?
Well, I'm thinking
you
about
can always
what you're
too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the natural progression of this conversation and the way that idea of life showed up and
shit. That was my big one.
I think that I hadn't put a lot of thought into that before, but after this conversation, I think that that's what I'm leaning towards now, because obviously they're going to go ahead and, I mean, once it seems pretty clear, they're going to be doing asteroid mining or something, right? Like from all mm-hmm. the promotional materials. So, from there, what's really exciting, you know what I mean? And that would be life, right? Like, I think most people think about Europa and some of those moons on Jupiter as maybe being mm-hmm. places where you might find that as you expand into the solar system. So that finding something like just primitive organisms, whatever, on Mars would be...
That was my next question. Do you think it's going to be microscopic life or macroscopic? Like, are they going to have the balls to have, like, a worm on Mars? Or...
No.
Because that kind of would... That would be... That'd be kind of rough. Although, I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't my area of expertise. I mean, I've definitely read a lot of sci-fi and things like that. And generally speaking, you don't hear much about that. Being possible. I think you could probably find microscopic life on Mars though, right? I mean, there was water there. There still is water there.
And that would still, that would be a game changer. The fact that there is life on another planet, you know, not in a far off star, but in our own solar system, life managed to find a way. That would be insane. And I could also see, like, even if we don't get it to this season proper, that when, if, you know, we're lucky enough that they kick it ahead another 10 years, like, and we're going into like maybe colonizing Jupiter moons, there could be a blurb about, you know, signs of life on Europa or something like that. Since Pete stole my prediction, I'm going to go back 20 years to when I was really enthused in space and I read Robert Zubrin's A Case for Mars, and I read the Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars. There's a sequence in that trilogy where they begin terraforming Mars. Well, they do a whole bunch of shit, but the thing that the big hammer they do is they get an ice comet, and they tow it into an eccentric orbit of Mars, where every time it's like this very eccentric elliptic orbit of Mars, and every time it passes the planet, it nicks the atmosphere, heats up a little bit, and drops its water into the atmosphere and water vapor, and over like they start this process, and over dozens of years, it actually starts restarts kind of the Martian ecosystem. And I think this is probably not going to happen, but I think it would be super cool if they lay the tracks towards that, because I know these people have read Robert Zubrin's Case for Mars. I know they've read Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, and they already got a functional Martian colony. They're either going to go out to the Jovian system and start colonizing that shit, or they're going to start some Zubrin shit. And I'm staking it out. They're gonna lay the tracks towards terraforming Mars by the end of the season.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you guys too. Like, you know, when they set out to make this series, they had to pitch it with like a destination. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, to.
And I guess Apple likes they kind of were looking for 5, 6, 7 season pitches too in those early days, because they wanted stuff with legs.
Yeah. So what do you guys think that? I mean, you just sort of said you think what then that they, when they said this is what this show's about, and this is where it ends, where do you think that was?
I mean, get out of the solar system, right? That seems the logical barrier. Ooh. What do we find when we leave our solar system?
Yeah, because what do you think, Aaron?
In my mind, I don't know if I ever talked about this, but I always thought that like 5 seasons felt right, because then probably the last of the first season crew would probably be dead. And then you know, and I think that's enough time to put humanity on a decidedly more hopeful trajectory. Because I think this show is aspirational. The show is like, what if we stopped investing in just wonder and science? What if we didn't stop doing that? What if instead of like, you know, putting our heads down literally and burying our heads in the sand and like pursuing profit motives and continuing to burn fossil fuels and do a pittance towards research into fusion and green technologies, like what how would that make the world better? And I think that that's like the statement that for all mankind, you know, because that's like for all mankind, that is a aspirational message. That is not I got mine, fuck you. It's this is something that we're uplifting the entire planet. And I think again, I mean, I'd be happy to get 7, 8, 9 seasons and go to the close of the 21st century where we've got, you know, bases on every moon on Jupiter, and you know, we're colonizing the outer, and then like having a generational ship on its way out of the solar system would be a great. I just don't know if they can get there in just another season.
No,
or two,
not in 5. Like, you need 7 at least to do that.
But doesn't 5 feel right? That like the last of the Apollo astronauts are dying, or maybe like you got old man Baldwin. He's 80 years old. He's 90 years old, and he dies in the close. But he dies knowing that his children and his grandchildren have a better world, and he, you know, for better or worse, help build that. At some point, he almost destroyed it all with a high head move. But he, you know, like I think that would be a cool bookend. We start with Ed, we end with Ed. And, we only got a season left, if that's true, which.
Yeah, because I think you have only a few, you know, as far as like the big questions or whatever, I think you only have a couple paths, you know what I mean? And then you have First Contact. You know what I mean? That's a weird one to end on. You know what I mean? Like, because how do you, it would be, I think you could do it, obviously, but like, what would that say? You know, like, what would you be trying to say by saying like, well, we finally met people from we met other civilizations, so now this show is done. I think, like you said, there's a good idea of like making, seeing that it is better, like it's permanently been changed for the better, and that, you know, it's on this trajectory, and that kind of does line up with the idea of leaving, you know, like whether it's a jump forward in technology where there's, you know, some kind of real chance of us moving around, or generation ships going out to the next star or something like that. I mean, that all feels like places where it could stop. But yeah, I think, I don't know, you know, like what they were really going for in the beginning, because a lot of, like, if you think about it through a political lens, a lot of it is kind of, you know, it's kind of murky, you know what I mean? Like what, like a one world government, like nobody really thinks that's like a great idea from where we're at right now, something like that, you know, like to where.
But it also seems inevitable. Like
it does seem inevitable, been, like, but is that a popular thing?
We either kill us all or we figure it all out, you know?
Yeah. But I just think it's, like I said, it feels a little dodgy to be like, yeah, we're going to show how everybody all came under the hand of one all-powerful government or something, you know what I mean?
Maybe do it's first contact. Like this... We get James Cromwell in a leather beanie and vest, and he makes the jump, the warp one, right as the Vulcans are going by the Saturn, and the pointy ear guys with the robes land, and then there we go. But I don't know.
Alternatively,
I like
a man named Epstein is born. I don't know.
That's a guy who's heading to Mars, got some crazy ideas for radically improving the efficiency of the fusion drives.
I think we could
see that. That would be a hell of a Easter egg if you have you know, an
the
Epstein
guy who did
born
the plasma drive named Epstein.
Like a kid born in the last season, and his name's Epstein, and he's on Mars, and that would be an A+ Easter egg.
Yeah, because really I assume you shovel. Can do that without like wrecking IP rules, right? Like,
it's a name. It's a name. It's Epstein. Yeah. He's not going to invent a drive or anything. He's just a baby.
Unless his name is Walt Disney, and then you get sued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else that we want to talk about before we get out of here?
Do you think season's going to be any different with writing as far as like the tone goes or anything now that Ron Moore is not as involved at all?
He wasn't really involved last season, and I thought that last season was not quite as good as season two, but of a piece of their other seasons. God, season two is just, man.
I mean, they're all there. I mean, from the beginning, like he's obviously the biggest name, but he was a co-creator. Yeah. Like there were three of them. And the other two are still there. And he's still an executive producer. I don't know what that means as far as him being involved
he's
in the
cash
the
and checks.
Room.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I heard like last season he wasn't in the writer's room at all. He's kind of moved on to his, I forget what he's working on now, but he's kind of moved on to something else. And
I didn't
see a huge drop off in quality other than like we talked about this off air, but I did see maybe a slip in the scientific accuracy. And if you heard our podcast last season, I had a couple bones to pick with it, but maybe they're going to play a little faster and looser now that maybe Ron's not there to insist, but maybe Ron would have had the crazy silly string cables and North Koreans landing a module on Mars. Who knows?
Well, one thing that I did want to touch on before we go, like the every season we've lost major characters, right? And you're talking about inevitability earlier. Like it's inevitable that these characters are not going to keep jumping 10 years into the future. I mean, Ed is definitely he's a decade older than Danny Poole.
Good Danny.
So yeah, so like, do you think it's better if Ed actually makes it out, like he's a surprise survivor of this season, or do you think it's time to just give him his send off? What'd you say in the trailer? Like, I always thought I'd go out in a blaze of glory.
I feel like it really depends on how long they want the show to go, because I don't see him sticking around for three more seasons after this, but maybe one more if they want to end it at 5.
I was saying, if they want to do the Ed bookend, like I was kind of angling for, then one more season. But if they're going to go long, if they like Apple TV's like, you know what, we love it, we love the audience you got, we're gonna just give you a soft commit to 7, then
he might be out this season, man.
Because he has like lived through some crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was dead. Honestly, hand to God, the first time I saw the finale of season three, I thought sure Ed was dead. I thought sure that was going to. My son, tears streaming down his eyes. He was like, we both thought, and when we're like, we both lost our shit when they cut to him walking away from that one that more landing. Flaming piece of wreckage. It's like, God damn. He's living a charmed life, but he recognizably looks really old and grizzled this season.
Like I said, I think if they were going to keep him for another 10-year jump, like you'd have to start getting like into some Irishman like aging stuff or something, because like Joe,
reverse Irishman.
What's his name? Joel Kinnaman. He's too big and like fit for
prime.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they did it. They kind of hand waved it away with the other stuff before, but like. They're going to have to address that in some way. You know what I mean? Like,
I could see him being in like a wheelchair away. Or he might. I could see Joel, because he's always plays like these physically powerful prime into life. It'd be an interesting acting challenge for him to be like a stooped, you know, aging guy in a final season, kind of like, just like astronaut emeritus kind of type of dude. Kind of careening around NASA causing trouble. But yeah, one more. I think unless they do something crazy, like stop advancing 10 years. Yeah. His kind of time is numbered.
Is there any chance that they do some big health advancements, prolonging people's lives?
Maybe, but like he spent so much time in space, I think it's he's got just nothing but tumors, you know. But so it's like he might people after him might live longer, but Ed. But that's another good call. Like the advancements of science, I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, got a 120-year-old Ed kicking around in season 8.
Yeah, the online joke is that that they're gonna be he'll be a head in a jar with a robot body,
Futurama style. Yeah.
I could dig that mecha Ed. Mm-hmm. I no longer need a space suit. I don't know if we're going to get to
that. Yeah, but they could definitely. I mean, as far as how accelerated the timeline is, I think that they could make it like where anti-aging stuff really starts to play a part in like the 2010, 2020, like, you know, when we get to like what would be present day. Mm-hmm.
Maybe he goes, the AI advances and he just uploads his consciousness into the mainframe. A space probe with Ed's consciousness leaves the solar system at the end of season 7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be something.
It's quasi-manned spacecraft.
He turns into Siri, gets on every smartphone, and to activate him, you have to say, "Hi, Bob."
I feel like we're really at the point where I don't want to see any of the characters go.
Yeah,
I know, but it's it's literally the
which is a pretty good place to be in when you're watching a TV show for drama, invested. Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they've really that was what last season was good for, trimming the fat. Like all the characters I hated are gone or incapacitated or sidelined. All the characters I love are stay winning, except for Molly, RIP. But
yeah.
Well, I think because I thought Pete was about to say we've reached the stage of the podcast where Jim and Aaron are just making jokes, and which usually means this podcast is over. Before we get out of here, I did want to talk about our release schedule. We have screeners, obviously, this season, so we will be releasing the episodes date and time with the actual episode of For All Mankind. And we're either going to have, depending on the volume, maybe a separate feedback show, or we'll just record a special feedback section to append to those episodes. I'm not sure how we're going to, or maybe we just don't do feedback this year. Who knows? But we will have those episodes ready, me and Jim's takes, as soon as the episode drops on Apple TV Plus. So you got that to look forward to. Pete, what's your plans for the season, and where can they find you?
I'm just going to be doing it like I covered season 2 and season 3, so it'll be the same thing. I'm in the same boat. I got advanced copies, so I'll be able to have them out relatively quick. It takes a little bit longer because I have to get the video file and then cut it. So it's not like one-to-one. I can't get it out right whenever the episode ends, mm-hmm. but within the next 12 hours or so usually. And I will also make another one of those big timeline changes. I'll do that. I'm going to front load that one this year so that it's comes out sooner, especially since they put the stuff up on the website already to watch the years we missed. So yeah, you can find me on YouTube. Just search Pete Peppers. It's easy to find. I'm going to be covering this. I might be doing, I saw Beacon 23. I don't know if you guys saw that. It's based on Hugh Howey, who wrote Silo, one of his books. Saw a little bit of that. I might cover that. I don't expect it to be as big as Silo because it's on MGM Plus instead of, you know, it's on the same network that like, the TV show From is on, which From has a pretty big following, but like it's the only thing that I ever heard of from that. So, you know what I mean? Might be doing something of that, and I might be doing some Fargo based on whether I can get a hold of FX or whatever. So,
well, if you do, there might be some more Bald Move synergy there, because we're going all in on the Don Draper season of Fargo too. Don Draper.
Yeah, because I've been rewatching Fargo, and it's a weird series because it just came out like so spaced out over the years or whatever. Like it.
Yep.
I'm rewatching it, you know, from start to finish, and man, it's really good.
It is.
I really like it. It doesn't.
I like every one of the seasons.
Yeah, I got problems. I thought there was. It's not the most even thing ever out there. You know what I mean? But every season has some really great stuff in it.
Yeah, and I like how Noah Hawley, he doesn't feel pressure to like crank one out, and FX doesn't put that pressure on him. It's like when he comes up with an idea, he wants to kick around and work out. He comes back with one, and I've liked all the seasons. I had my quibbles with season two, which I think everybody's his favorite season, so I'm an oddball there. But I've enjoyed every one of them, and it looks like a weird season. It's more of a comedic Coen Brothers. It feels like it's got the Big Lebowski and Raising Arizona. That John Hamm performance is pretty broad in every sense of the word. So I'm looking to see a lot more maybe humor than your average Fargo season, which Fargo can be pretty funny. So
yeah,
we'll see if we
some
can
of
get
the better stuff
there.
In season four was actually the funny stuff. I thought, you know,
true.
With the two characters that I can't remember their names right now, but some
the
of
bandits.
That wasn't yeah.
We'll have this Pete's channel on our show notes if you want to quickly link over to it. Check that out in the show notes. Otherwise, of course, you can send us feedback. FAM. For All Mankind, FAM at baldmove.com. If you'd like to find out what else we're doing besides Fargo, True Detective, we got a bunch of movies. We're watching the Holdovers, the new Paul Giamatti movie. You know, we got to get in on that. Speaking of Joel Kinnaman, we're probably going to see Silent Night in December as a first run movie. I think there's one. What's the other one? Napoleon? As far as movies. Mm-hmm. And but the short story is, you want to go to our social medias to check out what we're doing each and every week and month. We're at Bald Move everywhere except for TikTok. We're at Baldest Move there. And then if you like what we're doing and you want to get more of it and bonus features and ad free content, please check out our club at support.baldmove.com. Pete, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on and helping us break down the new season. Very interested in coming, keeping track of your coverage, and maybe we can come together another point later in the season and compare notes.
Yeah, if it kicks off and some people start watching and everything, then I would be glad to talk about it more. I really like it. I really like the show. I feel like the one thing I don't like about it is it just doesn't have that buzz, you know.
It doesn't. One thing we noticed, because we were kind of disheartened in the audience that we were finding, but we found that like when we went back and looked at the numbers, like it really picked up in the tail half of last season. So I know it has a passionate following. Hopefully we'll be able to connect with those people watching it. We'll be able to connect eyeballs and ears. I appreciate you having you on. Look forward to talking to you soon. And everybody else, thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll see you next week for the first episode, the season premiere, season four, For All Mankind. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
I'm Jim.
I'm Pete,
Bye, Bob.